The title for today's Agadita is humility, specifically the humility of Hillel. And that sugya, that Agadita, begins on the very bottom of Daf Lamed Amud Beis with Tana Rabbanan, the last line on Daf Lamed Amud Beis. The previous sugya was about contradictions in the works of Shlomo HaMelech, whether it was Koheles, whether it was Mishlei, whether we should respond to the cajoling of the Ksil, who is the adversary, tries to undermine our belief in Torah Shebal Peh, or should we just not pay any attention to him? And the Gemara came to the conclusion that in some cases, when we talk about the beauty and the amazing miracles that will transpire at the time of Mashiach, and the Ksil is very cynical because he keeps quoting the same verse over and over again, whether it's this Ksil or that Ksil, Ein Chodesh Tachas HaShomesh, how could there be these supernatural events that are going to take place, new creations, you know, the trees of Eretz Yisrael are going to produce fully baked loaves of bread. How could it be? So in each case, the Gemara says that Hillel would try to respond and try to show that even within the nature that we know today, there are similar phenomena of things that grow very quickly, overnight, so forth and so on. That was the Agadita that we had before. And since we had this whole sugya about how Chazal, how the rabbis would respond to the, you know, these intimidations, if you will, of the Ksilim, and with great patience, they would take those arguments seriously and try to respond and try to answer the Ksil on his level. So that leads us to this entire Agadita about Hillel. And Hillel and Shammai, in this case, are very different personalities. And there's a great contrast between the two. So Tana Rabbanan, Li'olam Yehi Adam Anvasan Kihillel Vi'al Yehi Kapdan Kishammai. A person should strive to emulate the attribute of humility of Hillel rather than the stern attribute of Shammai. And the Gemara now is going to tell a number of different stories that illustrate the difference between Hillel and Shammai. Maisa, the first story, Bishnei B'nei Adam, and here we're turning to Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Now, the premise of this story is that Hillel's humility was very well known. And the reputation of Hillel was such that you can't get Hillel angry. No matter how much you try to instigate and you try to needle him, he'll always maintain his composure. So the Gemara tells us a story about two people. Obviously, they're not the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, and they're not the most pious individuals. Shehim ruzet zeh. They took a bet. Amru, they said, Kol mishe yelech v'yaknit es Hillel, anyone who's able to provoke Hillel and cause him to get angry, is yitol arba meos zuzi. Each one put down on the table 400 zuz, which is an awesome sum of money. And they challenge one another. Is there anyone here, one of the two, who's willing to take this gamble? If he succeeds, then he'll collect the additional 400 zuz. He'll walk out with 800 zuz. If he fails, then he's left with only 400 zuz. I'm sorry, then he's left with zero, I meant to say. Right? He's going to lose the whole pot. Amar Echad Mehem. So one wise Alec, one smart Alec says, Aniak Nitenu. I'll know how to do it. Osa Yomer of Shabbos Hoya. It was a Friday. Hill Chafafes Rosho. Hill was shampooing his hair. In other words, he was basically in the bathhouse, you know, taking preparing himself for Shabbos. Holach v'yover al Pesach beso. Well, I shouldn't say the bathhouse, because that sounds like he's outside of his house. But in any event, so this individual who's out there to provoke Hillel, he passes by Hill's house. Amar, and he declares, and he calculated exactly when Hill would be in the middle of his shower. And he says, Mikan Hillel, Mikan Hillel. Now imagine the chutzpah. Hillel was the Nasi. And yet he calls him by his first name, as if he's a nobody. This is all part of his provocation. Where's Hillel? Who's Hillel here? This Atev, Hillel covers himself with a, I don't know what, some sort of a garment. V'yotza l'krosa. And he goes out to meet this person. In the middle of his shout, right? Amalo. And Hill turns to him and he says, Bini, my son. You know, very soft kind of approach. Ma to mevakish, what? How can I help you, basically? Omalo sha'elo yeshli lishol. I have a question to ask. Omalo sha'al bini sha'al. Ask you a question. And he asks him, now this is going to be a whole series of questions about the physical deformities of various that are common in various nations. So in the first story, we're talking about the Babylonians. Mipnei Mara Sheim Shel Bavliim Sgal Galos. In other words, their heads are particularly round in shape. That's what Rashi seems to understand here. Now, there's another way of learning skalgal. It comes to the word segol, which is kind of oblong. You know, you have two and one, or the other way around. Anyway, they have funny-shaped heads. Bini, amalo bini. So Hill responds, my son, shela gedola shalti, you asked a very outstanding question. And my Rebbe used to always say about Reb Chaim, about his grandfather, that anyone who came in to ask him a question, Reb Chaim would show the person who asked the question that his question was very profound, when his question was really just trivial and superficial, just to give the person a good feeling. In the Shia, the Rav didn't always do it that way, you know. But anyway, he says, "Mipnei she'ein lahem chayos." Pikchos. Now the word chaya is a reference to yoledes. That's a woman who helps a pregnant woman on the labor give birth. And he says that the Babylonian yoldos are not professionally advanced, and as a result, they don't help the baby get out in the normal way. I don't know, maybe it's a breech birth. I don't know exactly where they fell, but as a result, it actually has an impact on the shape of the head of the baby. Fine. So at this point, the conversation concludes. Halach, he goes away. Vehimtin shah achas. In Chazal, the word shah means a short period of time. It doesn't mean 60 minutes. Chazar v'yomar, mikan hillel, mikan hillel. Nisate fiyotzel across omelo, bini mato mevakesh, shela yeshli lishol, omelo shaal bini shaal, mipne ma einayim shel tarmo dien trutos. Now Rashi tells us the Tarmodian were a nation that came from an area, a location called Tarmod, which is in the desert, and that's going to be very important that these were desert dwellers, if you will. And their eyes are trutos. Now Rashi learns that trutos means they're very round. You know, it's usually eyes are not perfectly round, but here they were round eyes. Now I'm not sure why, but Rashi seems to assume that round eyes is kind of a... an ugly, you know, distortion of the eye. It doesn't look particularly attractive. So why do these Tarmidian have those eyes? Amalo, he says, B'ni she'la g'dola sh'alta, you're asking a great question. This reminds me of Sefer Iyov, you know, where Iyov is constantly being challenged by different phenomena in the natural world. Here it's biology, I guess you'd say. Mipnei shedorin bein hacholos. These people live in the desert. And as a result of the desert, they have to close their eyes, or perhaps it means that their eyes have to be inserted a little bit deeper because the winds and the blowing sand from the desert endanger their eyes. And as a result, God gave them eyes that will, instead of protrude outward and be more vulnerable, they would somehow be, what's the word I'm looking for? Will be in, when you push something in, what's the word I'm looking for? But you know the point that I'm trying to make, right? So that basically what Hill is telling this person is that you know, we have, in a certain sense, we have something to learn from everyone, from every nation, about, you know, health and about biology. You know, we need to help a pregnant woman give birth in the proper way. We need for people, you know, protect their eyes from danger, and God has built the world in such a way that that we can, you know, we can survive, we can face all these challenges. Holach v'himtin sha'achas, waits another period of time. Chazav yom mikan hillel nisatev v'yotzel ikroso. Still trying to provoke Hillel unsuccessfully. Amalo, b'ni, ma'ato mevakesh. Amalo, she'le yesh li lishol. Amalo, sha'al b'ni sha'al. Mipnei ma ragleim. Why are the legs shel afrikim rechavos? That the African nation has very wide feet. Amalo, b'ni she'le g'dol sha'altem neshedorim. So I guess in Africa there are a lot of swamplands, and God gave them wider feet because it's very important that they be able to sort of like float on the surface of the marshlands rather than sink into the marshy earth. So this is all part of God's creation to protect these people living in those parts of the world. Omalo. Now, at this point, I guess this gambler makes one last attempt at getting Hill angry, and he says to him, "Shelos harbe yeshli lishol. I have many, many questions to ask." Uvisyore ani shema tichos. I'm afraid that you might get angry. And he was hoping at this point that maybe Hillel would break down, and he would say, you know, I had enough of you. Get out of here already. You've been bothering me to no end. But yet Hillel was still very, very calm. Nisate fi Yoshev lefonov. As if to say, I have nothing better to do with my time than answer your questions. Omalo, so he says to him, this person, Atahu Hillel Shekorinoscha Nasi Yisrael. Are you the great Hillel that is the Nasi, the head, the chief leader of the Jewish nation? In other words, this was also part of his attempt to try to get Hillel angry. You know, are you really the guy? You know, in other words, I don't recognize you. Omalo Hain, he says, yes, I am him. Omalo, Im Atahu, if you're the guy, then lo yirbu kmoscha b'Yisrael. I hope there are not too many people like you in Israel. Amalosa, he was taken aback. He said, B'ni mipnei ma? I mean, why do you say such thing? Did I do anything to offend you? Amalo mipnei shibadati al yodchar b'miosus. Because as a result, I lost 400 zuz in my bet. We don't need people like you around. Amale. So he'll respond to him. He says, Avizoy baruchacha. In other words, be careful what you say. Because Kedayu Hillel, he talks about himself in third person, and it's worth your while to have such a person named Hillel, Sheta Abid al Yodo, Dalid Meo Zuz, Vidalid Meo Zuz. Now, I'll get back to this in a second, why he repeats Dalid Meo Zuz twice. But Vehil lo yakpit, and Hill will not get angry at you. So that even though you lost so much money, it was worth it, because the Nasi b'Yisrael, the chief, the president of Israel, has to be endowed with with a midah of tolerance, to be able to be soft and compassionate and tolerant to other people, rather than get angry at people. And that's what we need in our leaders. We need people who are not kavdanim, but rather are rachmanim, and very tolerant. They don't get angry. The Marsha says, why does he repeat himself twice about the Dalid Meo Zuz? He says that the person put down the bet. On the one hand, he thought he would gain 400 zuz, and that he lost. So he lost his revach. But on the other hand, he also lost the 400 zuz that he put down out of pocket. So in essence, he lost 800 zuz, so to speak. 400 potential that he could have won if Hillel would have gotten angry, and the other 400 that he lost in the bet. Tana Rabbanan, a second story that indicates Hillel's humility. Maisa ben Achriyechet Shebol lifnei Shammai. Amalo, he asks Shammai, Kama toros yesh lachem? Amalo, shtayim. Torah shebichsav and Torah shebal peh. Amalo, shebichsav ani ma'mincha. I believe in the written Torah, in the Bible. But shebal peh, ani ma'mincha. I don't believe. I don't accept the oral tradition. Sounds like a tzduki. But this was not a tzduki. A tzduki is someone who's born Jewish. Now we're talking about someone who's born a non-Jew. Geruni, I want you to convert me, Almanas, on the condition of Talamdeni Torah Shebichsav. I'm only willing to learn Torah Shebichsav. And I'm accepting upon myself a commitment to fulfill all the mitzvahs in the Torah, in your holy Bible, but only that which is written in the written Torah. Now, we have a halacha in Gerus that a person who's willing to accept, let's say, 612 mitzvahs and not 613, we don't accept him as a ger. How much more so in a case of someone who's not willing to accept Torah Shebal Peh? Is Garbo, Shammai berated him, Votzio benizifa, and he gave him a nizifa, he gave him a... some sort of a disapproving, he looked at him in a very low way. He described him in a very, he really rejected him. Bolifnei Hillel, same person comes in front of Hillel with the same story, and Gaire. And yet Hillel was willing to be Megayer him. So before we go on, it's very nice that Hillel has the midah of Anvanuso, of humility, but how can you be Megari someone who's unwilling to learn Torah Shebal Peh? So Rashi says that the reason why Hillel accepted him is not that Hillel immediately converted him with a full-fledged Gerus, but that Hillel took it upon himself to bring about a situation when this individual, this non-Jew, would finally accept the whole gamut of Torah, including not only Torah Shebichsav, but also Torah Shebal Peh. So it was a kind of a provisional gerus, almost like step one, and it would not be a complete gerus until finally the ger would accept all 613 mitzvahs with Torah Shebaal Peh. And this, by the way, I mean, that's not for us today, but this has tremendous implications for the very, very difficult halachic issues in our contemporary world, especially here in Israel, with regard to gerus. You know, can we accept gerim that at this point in time we have every reason to believe that they're not willing to accept the entire Torah? Can we at least take them into our, you know, if you're familiar with the term ulpan of gerus, and teach them and hope that at the end of the line they will accept the entire Torah? That's a big machlokas today. In any event, now the Gemara tells us how patient Hillel was with this ger. You know, I'm reminded of my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. If you know the story, he had a Baal Tshuva that he was Makariv, and he took him from like zero to become a very, very pious Jew in Boston, in the city of Boston. You know about this? Anyway, so the story goes, I mean, there are many parts of the story, but one part of the story is that the Rav literally took him on as his own pet project to teach him the entire Torah. And then they found a Jewish girl who was interested in marrying this man, and they fell in love, and it was really going to be a great simcha, and the Rav was going to be Masada Kiddush and everything. But the Rav told this man that there's a tradition that before you get married, you go to the cemetery to see, you say goodbye to, or get the blessing of your parents. And unfortunately, when he came back from the cemetery, he told Rav Soloveitchik that he saw something very strange, that on the tombstone of his father there was a picture that looked like this, and it turned out that this woman was a Gioris. And the Rav decided, based on the Simon, on the Matseva, that this man that he never knew was a Kohen was actually a Kohen. And the Rav had to tell him the bad news that he couldn't marry this girl. I mean, it was a very, very profound story. And anyway, so Hillel takes upon himself to take this ger and teach him the Torah. Yom HaKam, on the first day, Omer Le, he says to him, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. So this non-Jewish student learns the Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. L'machar apichle. The next day he says it's Dalet, Gimel, Beis, Aleph. So Omer Le, so this potential convert says to him, Va'esmo lo amarta li hacha. Yesterday you told me just the opposite, that it's Aleph, then a Beis, then a Gimel, and a Dalet. Omer Le, so Hillel says to him, For esma lo amarta li hach, right? I'm sorry. Omar lo lav ali dideka samchis. In other words, today you're coming back and you say, no, it cannot be Dalet Gimel Beis Aleph, because you, Hillel, you're my rabbi, you taught me that it's Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. It means you totally relied on me. The Alpen Nami smoke a lot. In other words, I'm teaching you the written Torah so that you can read it in its original Hebrew, and you totally relied on me, and I taught you, and you learned well. If you have total reliance on me on the Torah Shebichsav, then you should rely on me even on the Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, the story goes on, but we don't know the end of the story. Apparently, the Rashash, who is one of the late Rishonim of Sfarad, he claims that that perhaps at the end of the day, this ger accepted Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's why the Gemara quotes this story, to show you that Hillel was able to take this non-Jew who insisted that he doesn't accept and he will not accept Torah Shebaal Peh, but he was able to soften him up. Shuv Maisa. Okay, this is one of the most famous agaditas, if not the most famous agadita of all Shas. Ma'isa b'nochri echad shebolifnei Shammai. Omalo, he says to Shammai, Geiruni, I'm standing on one foot, teach me the entire Torah. And dochvo bi amas habinyon shebiyodo. Now, there are two parts here. Number one, point number one, is that Shammai rejected him out of hand, because there's no way that you can learn the entire Torah while you stand on one foot. How many minutes can you stand on one foot? There are so many even fundamental principles of the Torah, the Yud Gimel Ikrim, for example, that you couldn't even teach a person when he's standing on one foot. But the second part of this sugya is to try to figure out, what does it mean, dachvo? The Gemara could have said just dachvo, you know, he pushed him away, or dacho, he rejected him. But be amas habinyon shebiyodo. Now, shebiyodo means he's holding something in his hand. And binyan is something that you use in the context of building. But exactly what amas is, some sort of a piece of wood, if you will, that you use for building purposes, that's not clear. So the Marsha says that it's a ruler. It's actually something that you need to measure the distances, because if you're involved in construction, you have to know distances exactly. But why would Shammai reject him with the ruler that he uses for building? So according to the Marsha, the ruler becomes very, very critical when you measure the foundations of the building. And Shammai basically wanted to point out to him that before you learn the Torah, you've got to learn the foundations of the Torah. You'll need one introduction after another. A building cannot stand while it's on one leg, on one pedestal. The stronger the foundation, the stronger the building. So you cannot reduce the Torah to one single principle, which is what Hill is about to do. You have to learn all the different precepts, all the different foundations and fundamental principles that underlie the Torah. You cannot sum them up in one quick, short, precise statement. And therefore, says the Marsha, therefore, Shammai rejected this ger. There's no way that you could have a gerus without fundamentals. And standing on one leg is like a building that stands without foundations. Balifnei Hillel, girei, and he was willing to be megayer him. Omar lo, so how did he teach him the entire Torah when the guy was standing on one leg? The alecha sani, that which is despicable to you, if somebody would have acted that way to you. Lechavrcha lo sa'avit, don't do it to your friend. Zoe kolatar kula, and ve'idah pirusha zil gmar. Now, many identify this statement of Hillel with another, they hold it's very similar to, aligned with another statement of Rabbi Akiva, V'ahavtalerech kamocha zeklal gadol batorah. However, Rashi has a whole new pshat here in this Gemara. So it's Rashi diramaskel d'olecha sani, which is approximately, I would say, halfway down the Amud. Rashi says, Re'acha v'rea avicha al tazov. Rashi says that the word Re'acha here has to be understood in the light of a passage in Mishle. And who is Re'acha in the passage in Mishle? It is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Al tavar al dvara. Don't violate the will of God. Shrei alecha shaharei alecha sanui sheyavar chavrchal dvarecha. Just like you would find it very objectionable for your friend to violate your will, so too understand that to violate the will of God is objectionable. So that in Rashi's first Lishna, this this, the Alecha Sani Lechavri Lo Savit, is really a metaphor for the Almighty. And the Almighty is called Reacha, and the Torah is basically can be condensed into one principle, that you should not violate the will of Reacha. Reacha here is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like you would not want your friend to violate your will, so too, God is your friend, don't violate His will. Then Rashi quotes a Lishna Achrina, second possibility here, Chavercha Mamish, Kigon Gzela Gneva Niyu Ferov HaMitzvos. And then you take the word Chavercha literally, and basically, according to Rashi, Hillel is very similar to Rabbi Akiva, that Bein Adam L'Chavero is the key of keys. Now, this reminds me of a little story, if you don't mind my telling a little story. My father, may he rest in peace, had a good friend, Avram Bezdin. And there were two great brothers, Avram Bezdin and Rav Moshe Bezdin. So they used to spend very often summers together here in Eretz Yisrael. And it's an interesting piece of history. I don't know if you remember Machon Gold. So the Machon Gold building, which was owned by the Sochnut, was used for Rabbonim and their families as a kind of a dormitory during the summer period. And many Rabbonim used to come for that. Anyway, so my father used to spend a lot of time with the Bezdin boys, the Bezdin brothers. And they used to have a lot of different debates. Many of them are, in our family, are kind of part of the, you know, the tradition in our family. But they had one debate about which is greater, Bein Adam LaMakom or Bein Adam LaChavero. And the Bezdins were insisting that it's Bein Adam LaMakom. And my father said, no, it's Bein Adam LaChavero. And I, many, many years later, I showed my father a rush, you know, on Masechta Nedarim. The rush is published on the page. It's called the Pirush HaRush. It's mamish like a Rashi on Nedarim, because we don't have Rashi on Nedarim. And the rush there says that, no, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. It's not the rush on Nedarim. It's the rush on Peah. I'm sorry, the rush on Masechta Peah. So the first rush in Masechta Peah says that when you mekayim a mitzvah bein olam l'makom, it's one mitzvah. When you mekayim a mitzvah bein olam l'chaver, you get two mitzvahs. It's also bein olam l'makom, because God commanded you, and it's also bein olam l'chaver. So I showed this to my father to try to show him that this is a tana de Masayale, that bein olam l'chaver is a double mitzvah. But it also might mean that, you know, Rabbeinu Bechai is famous for saying in his Chovas HaLevavos that the yesod of all mitzvahs is Hakaras HaTov. And if you don't have Hakaras HaTov towards your friend, you know, which is all these Bein Adam LaChavero mitzvahs, then how can you expect to have Hakaras HaTov towards the Ribono Shelo? So start small. You know, start with building up relationships with your fellow Jew, and then you could have a relationship with the Almighty. The Ramban in his Pirush Al Torah in Parashas Kedoshim on the Pasuk V'Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, he says that it's a Hagzoma, which means it's an exaggeration. It's impossible to love your friend as much as you love yourself. And then the Ramban gives a whole reinterpretation of V'Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, in which he claims that it really is a negative. It means, don't be jealous of your friend. Don't, you know, forget him. Like he says, many people are so self-centered that they don't want anyone to have more than what they have. So, for example, in wealth, if you have $100,000 in the bank, you don't want anyone to have as much as you have, and certainly not more. So the Torah says, no. V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, that you should want the good for him as much as you want the good for you. And that's something he says, that's not an exaggeration, that's something that we could all achieve. And we could all, if we overcome our petty jealousy, we could be happy with others who have the same amount or even more than what we have. And it's not just in money and possessions. He gives a whole list of different kinds of areas of human existence. But the reason I mention this Ramban to you is because if you take a look at Hillel, Hillel doesn't say, love thy neighbor as thyself. He says, that which is despicable to you, if others did it to you, you shouldn't do to others. Which means that he's taking v'ahavta l'reich kamocha, and he's reducing it to a negative. This is what we call in the Lumdish jargon, an iser asay. Not a kumva asay, but an iser asay. And what it really means is that that the Torah is saying, love, don't do anything bad. You know, if you love someone, you don't want anything bad to happen to him, and certainly you don't want to be the agent to bring about something bad to him. And that becomes an iser aseh. Which makes sense, by the way, because as the Rabban points out in his Pirush al Torah, immediately afterwards it says, lo sikom v'lo sikar. Lo sitar. So you have all sorts of negatives here. So it makes sense that v'ahavt is also an iser aseh. Meaning you should have enough love for your fellow Jew that you don't want to see him suffer in any way. You don't want him to be inferior to you. You want all the good for him. And that's really what it says here in Hillel, the Olecha Sani L'chavrcha Lo Sa'avit. Shuv Maisa B'Nochriyech, and another story about a non-Jew Shaya Over Achorei Beis HaMedrash. He was walking past the Beis Medrash, V'Shama Kol Sofer, and he heard the Sofer who was teaching the children, Shaya Omer, he was teaching them the Parsha V'Elab Godim Shayasu. These are the beautiful garments for the Kohen Gadol, Choshen, the ephod, the breastplate, and the ephod, the different beautiful kelim that were designated exclusively for Aaron as the Kohen Gadol, and he would wear this during his Avodas HaMishkan. And this guy was very impressed. Wow, Omar, he leans over to the students and he says, Halolu lemi. Who are these garments for? Who are they designated for? They're very beautiful, grandiose garments. L'Kohen Gadol. They tell him it's for the Kohen Gadol. Omar, oh, so Nochviatzu, he thinks to himself, Eilech Vas Geyer, let me convert. Bishvil Shiyasimuni, Kohen Gadol. We see the way that the Jewish people love the Kohen Gadol. They adore him. They are in awe of him. They make him the most beautiful garments. This would be really really good idea. Now, why he thought that he would be the chosen Kohen Gadol, I don't know. That's one part of the sugya I don't understand. But Bol Lifnei Shammai, so he comes in front of Shammai Amalo Gairini, Al Menashe Tesimeni Kohen Gadol. Now, there's no way, of course, that a ger could be a Kohen Gadol. But that's what his precondition was. So Dofo Biamas Sabinyon Shebiodo. Again, using this measuring rod, and he hits him and he pushes him away. And maybe, says the Marsha, the message he was trying to convey is, you think that the whole Torah is all about the Kohen Gadol? I mean, Kohen Gadol certainly, is a major part of the Torah, but there's more to the Torah. There are great fundamentals. Like we said before, a building doesn't stand on one leg. Bal Lifnei Hillel, and Gairi. And Hillel starts teaching him. And he's going to make him into a full-fledged ger. Omalo. So Hillel says to this potential ger, Kluma midim melech elamishi odea taksise malchus. Could you imagine appointing a king who doesn't know about the how to wage war? He's got to be an expert in military thinking in order to be the king. And he says to him, Hill says to him in a similar way, Lech lemo taksise malchus. A Kohen Gadol is like a melech. He's royalty, and you better learn what it means to be a melech. So the Gentile now goes to learn the Torah, holach v'kara. So he has to learn what it means to be a Kohen Gadol, and he gets to a certain pasuk. And the pasuk indicates that he cannot be the Kohen Gadol. Kevin Shigia, he gets to the pasuk, V'azar hakarev yumas, the stranger shall die. Amale mikra zel mi nemar. But who is this stranger that's going to die? Amlo Hill tells him, anyone who's not a Kohen. Afilu al David Melch Yisrael, the great King David, if he comes into the Azorah and he does the Avodah, then he's Chayev Kares for this. So imagine, you have someone who is the head honcho. There's no one more important than King David. And yet, he's excluded from the Avodah HaKorbanos. The Avodah of the Korbanos is singularly exclusively designated for the Kohen. And anyone who's not a Kohen, and that's something you can only acquire by birth, he doesn't have the status of Kahuna, then he's a Zar. So Nasal Sager Kalvachomer Biatzmo. So the Ger figured out with his own logic what the message here is. My Yisrael Shinikro Bonim Lamokum, the Jewish people, are considered the children of the Almighty. And that's even your rank and file citizen. Forget about David HaMelech. Umitoch Ava Shahavam Korolehem Bini Bechori Yisrael. And as a result, or as an expression of God's love for the Jewish people, he's called the firstborn of Israel. He's God's firstborn, Bini Bechori. And nevertheless, Ksivaleem Azarakar Vumas. Any member of the Jewish people who's not a Kohen, if he does the Avodah, he will die. Is Ger. I'm a lowly Ger. Hakal. Kal means I don't have the CV. I don't have the curriculum vitae over here of a Jew. I don't have any yichus. Ishebo b'maklo tarmilo. I just come with the bag on my back and the staff in my hand. Ishalach has kam v'kama. There's no way they'll accept me as a Kohen, let alone a Kohen Gadol. His balef ne shamai. He comes in front of Shammai, Omar lo, he says, Klum roi ani lios Kohen Gadol. Let's see if I made the right calculation. Could I possibly be a Kohen Gadol? Valo ksiv batorah, your Torah says, Vazara karev yumas, and I'm an alien, I'm not a Kohen. So we have to think exactly why this ger comes to complain against Shammai. I mean, Shammai actually rejected him. But maybe what the taina against Shammai is that, why didn't you explain this to me? You know, I embarrassed myself, you know, with this whole enterprise of presenting my candidacy to be a ger on the condition that I could be the Kohen Gadol. Why didn't you just explain to me? So we really don't have an answer here. It could be that this is what the Gemara means when the Gemara says that Shammai was a kabdon. Kabdon is a person, you come to him with a ridiculous request and he just throws you out. You go figure out why it's ridiculous. So imagine you come in front of your Rebbe and you ask a question. The Rebbe says to him, get out of here with that question. But if he doesn't take the time and the patience to explain to you why your question is ridiculous, then you're just humiliated by the whole experience. Bal ifne Hillel, Omar lo. So he comes in front of Hillel and he says to Hillel, Anvason Hillel, you are a humble person, Hillel, and you took the time to gradually explain to me why I'm excluded as a stranger, as an alien, from becoming a Kohen Gadol. Yanuchu lecha brachos al roshcha. Let God bestow upon you all the blessings on your head. Shekravtani tachas kanfei hashchina. You brought me close to the kanfei hashchina. Which means that it seems very clear from this Gemara, we didn't see it so clearly from the previous story, that the end of the story was a happy ending, that he actually went through Gerus, and he was willing to live with the fact that he could not be the Kohen Gadol. And I'm no worse than David HaMelech, who can't be the Kohen Gadol. It's like a woman, imagine a woman who would come to a rabbi and say, I want to become a ger, but on the condition that you'll accept my testimony. And a woman is technically possibly Eidus. So if you have the patience to explain to a woman that even David HaMelech is possibly Eidus, and we don't accept the Eidus of a Melech in Israel, I mean, that's just my own addition. More of a contemporary twist on it. Anyway, Liyomim later on is Davgu Shloshtam L'Mokam Echad. There was Hillel and Shammai together with this Ger. Amru, and they declared Kaptanuso Shel Shammai Biksha Litardeni. He declared Kaptanuso Shel Shammai Biksha Litardeni Mina Ola. In other words, he was claiming that the reason why I could have just completely been excluded from Gerus, which now he cherishes, is because of Hillel, of Shammai's Midah of Kabdanus, of being very strict with him. Stern, I guess you could say. But Anfenuso, Shel Hillel, Kervani, Kervanu Tachat, Kanfei Shechinah. As a result of the patience and the love and the humility of Hillel, I was able to enter into the Kanfei Shechinah. It's interesting, the Rambam Hilchos Geirus, whenever he talks about Geirus, he always mentions Knisa Tachas Kanfei Shechinah. All right, maybe another few minutes, and then we'll end it. Omrei Shlokish, my dechsiv. Oh, this is already. This is not something that we should botch up in 2 minutes. This is a pasuk in Yeshayahu Anovi, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just double check that. Yes, it's in Yeshayahu Anovi. Oh, this is very famous. The Gemara is going to divide up all Shisha Sidre Mishnah based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu Anovi. And then I think the Gemara is going to offer an alternative understanding of that pasuk and the six parts of the pasuk. So that I think we'll leave B'li Neder for another time. So let me just see if we can make a note of where we got up to. Okay, very good. Okay then, so first I want to thank everyone for coming.